Welcome to the Army Resilience Roundup podcast. I am your host, Lataria Walker. The Army can be a tough profession. Mix in additional responsibilities like leading troops, attending college, maintaining a home, parenting, keeping up with finances, basically living life. How can we successfully manage everything? How can we not just cope, but learn, grow, and thrive? Resilience. That's it. Resilience is the ability to persevere, adapt, and grow in dynamic or stressful environments. Resilience encompasses internal motivation, persistence, and how soldiers revitalize, recover, and adapt in order to respond constructively to challenges in their daily lives. Training and education empowers leaders and soldiers to demonstrate resilience. When individuals gain experience in applying these skills, it enables cohesive team building and drives readiness. The Army Resilience Roundup podcast is a place where you can find resources that will help you maintain your resilience. You are resilient. Welcome to the Army Resilience Roundup podcast, episode 5. I am your podcast host, Lataria Walker. Today, our guest is General Russell Honore, a retired lieutenant general who served as the 33rd commanding general of the United States 1st Army at Fort Gillem, Georgia. He is best known for serving as commander of Joint Task Force Katrina, responsible for coordinating military relief efforts for Hurricane Katrina. Our topic today is leading through tough times, treat every soldier like a tank. During this session, Honore will discuss his experience as a disaster management and climate preparedness leader and what it takes to lead through tough times. As an Army veteran, he will share his beliefs about what it takes to produce Army strong soldiers and the ways that leaders can boost their troops' resilience through effective support. Honore will also reveal his own core leadership principles that commanders and soldiers alike should consider integrating into their careers. General Honore, thank you for joining us today. I'm especially excited about this podcast, as I am a daughter of the city of New Orleans, born and raised there. I was actually a casualty, so to speak, of Hurricane Katrina. So many New Orleans natives were positively impacted by your leadership and tenacity during that time. I never thought that I would have the opportunity to thank you in person, sir, but here we are. Thank you for leading the city of New Orleans through one of the toughest times in our history. You are indeed a great leader. Thank you again for joining us. Sir, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I'm just an old farm boy that worked hard, grew up, and became a lieutenant general in the Army. The short story. But I did grow up on a farm. The important lessons was there, learned there as a young person. You learned the harder you work, the luckier you get. You learned hard lessons like you don't use a cloth to sharpen a knife, you use a stone. And the only thing between diamonds and charcoal is heat and pressure. That growing up tough, make tough leaders, where you learn to adapt and overcome. And one of those things those sergeants remind us about when I first showed up at Fort Benning, you learn to adapt and overcome, that there's some true principle. You'll never have everything you want. You'll never have all the time you need, and you'll never have all the people you want. So you got to adapt and overcome. Your leaders can give you just about everything. They can't give you more time. So you have to be an expert in time management. Those are some of the things I learned to grow up with. And you learn to fix stuff. You learn to adapt and overcome. When I was young, we had two TVs, one with sound and one with picture. And we'd stack them on top of each other if we wanted to watch TV, and the young and the dumbest would move the antenna around. So you learn to adapt and overcome. And when I came in the Army, found out all I had to do if we needed a new tire for a truck was order it. I thought that was the greatest system in the world. So we ordered all the parts we ever needed. those are some of the basic things that influenced my life as I grew up to be in my career as the First Army Commander.
Sir, you have a very impressive career. Thank you for your service and thank you for sharing. Let's jump right into our discussion. We've had a discussion or two prior to today's podcast, and you have a very interesting perspective on leadership, especially leading through tough times. Let's talk a bit about that. You've entitled today's presentation, Leading Through Tough Times, Treat Every Soldier Like a Tank. Describe to us exactly what it means to treat a soldier like a tank.
Yeah, when some people hear that, it might sound derogatory. But when you look at how we micromanage your tank maintenance in the units I've been in, that at least twice to three times a day, we would be checking the operational ready rate of the tanks, because that's what we call a pacing item. We didn't have a term for that for our soldiers, but we had a term for that for our tank. Because if a tank got sick in the morning, the idea is how we get it fixed before nightfall so we don't have to report it as having a problem, not mission ready. As I observed this, being forward deployed in Korea as commander of the 2nd Infantry Division along the DMZ, I said, we have more information on our tanks than we have on our soldiers. But the real pacing item, tanks are equipment. Our biggest assets is our soldiers. And a lot of the information I would get on our soldiers on monthly and quarterly report came from our higher headquarters from computer printouts saying, this is your reenlistment rate. This is how many people you have that didn't go to school. I said, well, what are we doing? We're keeping better account of our tanks than we are of our people. Thus, the term was born, treat a soldier like a tank, because they are our most important assets, our soldiers. And we cranked that up from going from weekly and monthly meetings about how we were maintaining tanks to doing the same thing with troops. And it was a little painful up front, but once everybody understood the requirement, and we added things like in that every soldier had to have a battle buddy that know where he or she is at any given time. And it's a responsibility. It's a moral responsibility to know where your battle buddy is. And if they're not there, you go look for them. And you report that they're not there until you find them. So those are some of the things that we're attempting to do on the ground. Again, Korea is about 11 months on the ground. Once you get in, get processed in, deprocess out. It was imperative that those 11 months be as productive as possible to troops when they're deployed away from home in a foreign country. That led to things like first month in command, I got a note from PERSCOM, that's what we used to call personnel command, saying you've got several lieutenants who are back in the United States, never got the OERs. Well, that didn't happen on my watch, but you fix it. So we started a new system. You could not leave Korea out of the 2nd Division unless you had your OER or your EER in your hand, because you could not process. You could not get your ticket from out processing to go home if you didn't have your OER and EER and your award processed. We fixed that. This is the Army. It's a volunteer Army, but it's the Army. That caused some consternations, but guess what? We got it fixed. And treating a soldier like a tank was a part of that program. To know what's going on with soldiers, know when they should be going up for their promotion board, know when they should get their awards and that they get their efficiency reports before they leave. Because once you come back to the United States, by the time you get here, the guy that was the first sergeant is probably at Sergeant Major Academy. The battalion commander is probably now at the War College. It's just hard to fix. So we tighten that up and put the hands of handling our soldiers where they should be in our personnel, our packs, and with our first sergeants and platoon sergeants to do what we've always said, you know, the number one priority is taking care of soldiers. But we put some teeth to it by coming up with the numerics to treat a soldier like a tank.
Wow, thank you. Thank you for that. So leading through tough times, talk to us a bit about what it takes to be an Army strong, resilient leader when circumstances aren't really ideal.
Well, except in the fact that the Army leads off standards. Everything has standards. If it don't have a standard, it's probably not worth doing. And the Army has probably told you what that standard is. It's task, condition, and standards. Leading through tough times, as I said earlier, you don't sharpen a knife with a cloth, you sharpen it with a stone. There are a lot of things we do in the Army that some people may not understand. We get up and run in the morning and do physical training. Well, and all that's changed now, how they do it. But still and all, you start the day, and there was an old Army commercial, we do more before nine than most people do all day. And that stands true today. I can remember seeing that commercial with the first sergeant taking a cup of coffee and saying, we do more before nine than most people do all day. And that's true. We're in the Army. If anybody could do this, then they would do it. Not everyone can do this. It takes a commitment to the mission, and it takes tough people. Because at the end of the day, what we ask people to do, be prepared to leave your family on short notice, deploy overseas, and go apply combat power and kill, capture, or destroy an enemy force. This is not like sports where people going off to play a game for the joy of winning or for the camaraderie to win or a multi-million dollar contract. First of all, we don't pay our troops that much. So this is a commitment to be prepared to deploy anywhere in the world on short notice. Be prepared to kill, capture, or destroy an enemy force that is threatening the United States or our allies. And that's a lot to ask for people. That's why everybody don't do it. And that's why everybody's not qualified to do it. And that's why I'm so proud to be a part of this Army team.
Absolutely. You've shared in the past that your personal motto is see first, understand first, act first. Why this motto? And how can soldiers and leaders integrate those same principles into their daily lives and careers?
Yeah, you know, I became exposed to that as a field grade officer in one of the schools I'd gone to. It's actually offtake of Sun Tzu, the ancient warrior. And it was in the book, The Art of War, I think was the name of the book, Sun Tzu, where he said, see first, understand first, act first. So these words are thousands of years old. But when I read them, it made so much sense. It made so much sense that we tell soldiers situational awareness, be aware of your situational awareness. First sergeant would tell the troops, watch your surroundings. And then how we took that term in the units I served in to operationalize situational awareness. If you see first, two nights ago, we had tornado warnings. The battle drill just came to me. See first, tornado, we're going for warning. We're going to watch. We need to move inside the closet. So you see first, you understand, and you act. Because the downside, you know, about 40 miles from here, we had homes destroyed by the tornado. We have the joy now of having digital apps that tell you. So it's not a function of not knowing, because we have information coming in on something as simple as a weather warning. See first, understand first, act first. I remember when I was a major at Fort Riley, we were out on battalion level training. And for 2 days, the weather service reported that there was a blizzard coming and it created Arctic type conditions. I was not armed with see first, understand first, act first. We just sort of continued to train until the unit ground down to a point where we had the soldiers evacuated to the hospital because we didn't have the Arctic equipment on our trucks and tanks, nor did we have the Arctic boots because it was just that cold, blizzard conditions at Fort Riley, doing local training. And that story ended up on NPR that we had to evacuate troops from the field because of cold weather injury. We weren't trained on it, and we didn't have the equipment to deal with that level of cold weather. And it reinforced that see first, understand first, and act first. Choose your time to do what you want to do based on constantly having situational awareness using that motto, see first, understand first, act first.
Sir, it seems like you're a master evacuator.
Sometimes it's best to move than stay and get pounded. Live to fight another day.
As soldiers matriculate through their Army career, what are some important leadership lessons you can share that they should also consider?
Number one, I say do the routine things well. That goes back to General Washington's army, where he would get into the details of hygiene. He lost a lot of soldiers in the Revolutionary War because of hygiene and factors like that. He would, when we park by the river at night, don't put the horses upstream from the maneuver camp. Put them downstream. I won't go into details there, but I think the audience can figure that out. So it goes back to the Revolutionary War, lessons learned, doing the routine things well. It's good reason that the drill sergeants teach the troops how to assemble and disassemble a weapon, even in the dark. Because there's some situations you're in where you can't use light. There's good reason why they teach soldiers to do it on based on time, because you may not have all the time and that's needed to reassemble and disassemble your weapon. So those come to standards. Do the routine things well. Some of the most disappointing things that happened to me as a commander, from platoon commander up to an army commander, was a failure to do the routine things well. A vehicle accident where the vehicle had mechanical failure, or the driver was going too fast. And on top of that, the vehicle wasn't properly dispatched. Consequently, many cases, soldiers were hurt. Do the routine things well. It's good reason why in our initial mission training, much about it is about routine, from fixing your bed to cleaning your protective mask to assembling your weapon. If you fail to do the routine things well, you have a miserable life. Very miserable life. You won't do things on time. You procrastinate. You will do it as quick as you can, not to standard. So follow the standard and do the routine things well. And that's not just for soldiers. That's for leaders. Counseling people and giving them feedback. Doing reports on time that help soldiers get promoted and help them get the awards and recognition. Processing paperwork so they can advance in their career to go get schooling. Many times, those set in leaders' boxes for days and weeks, and the soldier will miss an opportunity. You know, loyalty is a two-way street. It goes up and it goes down. And a part of doing the routine things well is relevant to everyone, from the soldier to the general, from the private to the command sergeant major. Do the routine things well. The second is, don't be afraid of the impossible. That's why we have an army, to go do what perceived by most people as impossible. If it wasn't impossible, you wouldn't need an army. You would just say, hey, we're hiring tomorrow and we're going to fight a war overseas. Y'all show up. Y'all come on now. Anybody want? No. We're trained to do the impossible. What most people think are impossible can be done. Difficult might take a little while, but impossible we do routinely in the army. And people watch back with amazement. In your personal life, don't be afraid to take on the impossible, whether that's a full work schedule, a young family, and trying to improve your education. You can do all that, but you have to embrace the impossible. If you think you got it hard now as a soldier, think about Washington's army, where all of them didn't have proper weapons, clothing, or boots, and secured food. They taught us how to sacrifice to accomplish the mission. And thirdly, as a leader, be prepared to be criticized and to accept criticism. Because if you're going to lead, you got to create change. And people don't like change. So a couple of ways I found to do that is to socialize the idea that change is coming. As a result of that, you're going to get some pushback. Listen to the pushback. Because maybe you can adjust things that make your change more effective. Particularly listen to the people who got executed. You know, there's an old saying around the Army, nothing's impossible for the damn fool that don't have to do it. Nothing's impossible if you don't have to do it. But you've got to be a master of change, because it's relevant. You may not have ended up with all the time you needed. You may not end up with all the equipment you needed. You may have had a change in mission. That's why we have an army, to be able to adapt and overcome. But beware, any change you institute, you need to be prepared to take the criticism that's going to come with it. And again, that idea of socializing that change is coming, I think, is important for our Army. And then preparing to deal with it and then leading that change. I remember the Army going through PT uniform changes. Every time we got a new sergeant major in the Army, we end up with a new PT uniform. And then you had so many weeks to do it. But as soon as it announced, I'd get mine and I'd start wearing it. Adapt and overcome. Lead change on simple things like that. Because if you can't handle the simple things, people will not trust you with the most complicated things. Lead change. Be prepared for it. And understand that people resist change. It's just a part of our nature. Even if they are soldiers, it's a part of our nature.
Wow, sir. Thank you so much. This information is invaluable. Thank you for sharing. You are indeed a great, great leader. In one of our prior conversations, you talked to me about leadership at its best with a geese analogy. And in closing today, I'd like you to share that analogy with our listeners.
I did not originate this story. I found it. And you can find it too on Googling leadership watching geese. And if you're an outdoor person or a person walking the park, you've seen flocks of geese. More than likely, you heard them before you saw them. Because when they fly, they make a lot of noise. And the analogy is those who've studied these geese said the reason they're making a lot of noise, they're telling the leader to go faster. And they generally fly in a formation, kind of a V formation. And those who've observed said the reason they're in a V formation is because of the aerodynamics of the group cause the lead and those that follow to go faster because of the aerodynamics of their wind that they move. They can go faster while flying in a formation. And they're making noise telling the leader, go faster, let's get there. And as they fly, the lead goose, if you get tired, they move back and let somebody else take the lead without any concern about who's the leader. If they're flying over South Louisiana, they probably will get shot. And if when that happens, and I've witnessed this myself from hunting birds, you shoot one and it falls, one or two will follow it down. You see, they go and check on their battle buddy. Why did the bird go down? And unfortunately, when they go in, sometimes they get shot. And it reinforced the concept of a battle loyalty. This is the kind of unit I want to be in. I want to be in a unit where we're telling the boss, let's go faster. Let's get it done. Let's move on to something else. I want to be in a unit where the boss, if they get tired, that it's okay. Somebody else will step up and we'll keep moving in the right direction. I want to be in a unit if somebody is not there at formation in the morning, somebody go look for them and find out where the hell they are. And that, in essence, is my story and this metaphor of leading, watching geese. That's the kind of outfit I want to be in. Let's go faster, boss. Let's get there. And if you're not there, I'm coming after you. God bless the Army.
Yes, sir. Sir, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners before we close? I think you've done an amazing job thus far.
I think the piece about resilience, those that we ask the most of to execute ideas, go from our initial interest soldiers, our young soldiers and their families. And it relates to a story that I heard from a guy in my family that used to teach family members in his company how to lay bricks. And the story is, I kind of called it the North Wall. I've told it to soldiers many a time. That if you went to work for Mr. T-Dog, that's one of these Creole names we got down here, Theodore, they call him T-Dog, and you were a first-year journeyman, you could remember and know that when it got cold, you were going to be on the North Wall, that you were going to be where the wind is blowing and where it's coldest. Because his temperament, he really wanted to know if you wanted to be there. Did you want to be a sunshine spring day bricklayer, or were you going to survive the winter and be there for the spring? Is this something you really wanted to do? And he would start you, if you started in the fall or in the winter, on the North Wall, where it was the coldest. He would also make sure you knew how to lay bricks in a straight line. And then at some point in time, if you survived that winter, he'd start show you how to lay bricks in an arch. And if you spent through the summer, he would show you how to create patterns with bricks so that he would stand up to the crew at sometime harsh weather. And if you survived all that, once you got good enough, he would tell you, it's time for you to go find another job because I really have all the people I need. But you're well-trained, you're well-equipped to go do anything you want. For me, it came 37 years, 3 months, and 3 days when the Army said, sir, it's time for you to go. And there's always a time for us to go. But the lessons we learn in the military, just like the ones we learned from Mr. T-Dawg, the bricklayer, is that the early years, you're going to be on the north wall. And if you learn how to lay bricks straight, he'll show you how to put them in patterns and create arches. And at a point in time, you're prepared to go do anything you want. And that's the great thing about my Army experience. I cherish it every day. For the lessons I learned, the people I met, I felt so strongly about it. I encourage both of my sons there in the family business there in the Army. One's a master sergeant in the engineers. The other one is an infantry rifle company commander. I didn't tell them this what they had to do. This was their chosen. They're well-educated and smart young men. This is what they chose to do. And I think that it makes me proud to see them in their uniform performing their tasks. As the Army, it's an opportunity. And they could have done anything they wanted to do, but they chose to be in the Army too. And they're in the National Guard in Louisiana.
Wow. General, what can I say? Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing nuggets on how leaders can rise to the occasion and lead through tough times. Thank you for sharing your core principles of leadership. Thank you for sharing your personal stories of Army life and your leadership. Thank you for saving the city of New Orleans through one of our toughest times. Thank you for just being a great leader indeed. Listeners, thank you for tuning in and have an amazing day. Thank you for joining this month's Army Resilience Roundup podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please continue to follow the Army Resilience Directorate on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Remember, stay resilient.